Chapter 14, Philippines. Someone was waving at me from a small window in the basement as I tried to find my phone in my backpack. I figured it had to be the place I was looking for. As I entered the little room, the humidity hit me like a wall. It was even worse than in Montpellier, and I immediately felt a sweat break on my forehead. There wasn't any air conditioning or open windows, only a few fans that moved the warm, sticky air around the small room. A man of around 50 years old, built like a rock with an Australian accent and a firm handshake, welcomed me. Stephen was the black belt who owned the gym. He had invited me to come train and offered to let me sleep in the gym. It was nice to have a place to stay for free, and sleeping in a gym was something I had expected to do a lot on the trip, but hadn't had the chance to do yet. What would a round-the-world jiu-jitsu backpacking trip be without sleeping in gyms? With the long flight all day, I mostly felt like going to sleep, but I was going to be on a tight schedule in Manila, so I thought that I might as well get some training done. I could sleep in the summer when I got back home to Denmark. I did a small class on guard passing. The material was really starting to fall into place for me after having taught it so many times. Jonathan was supposed to come and join, but he was nowhere to be seen. One guy asked how I would escape the rear naked choke when it is already locked in. It was a classic question. How do you prevent something when it's already too late? The answer is obvious. You don't get in that situation. If the guy has locked in the rear naked choke, that probably means he took you down, passed your guard, took your back, and got the choke. You already fucked up big time, way before the submission, so there are a lot of other things to work on than the submission defense. My finest analogy for these questions, if I should say so myself, I came up with while teaching a seminar far out in the countryside in Russia. How do you prevent your country from being destroyed when the nuclear missile is already launched and on its way to hit you? You don't. It's too late. You should have shot the guy who pushed that big red button. Same thing with the rear naked choke. Just don't shoot anyone. When we started sparring, I got caught in the moment and forgot how tired I was. Getting warm was no problem, and it was nice to go a few rounds. During the rolls, I didn't think too much about my surroundings, but was just focused on the task at hand. It wasn't until the second the timer beeped that I realized I almost couldn't breathe because of the heat and humidity. Stephen claimed that it might be the warmest gym in the world. I was sweating like a rapist and tempted to agree with him. Every time a round ended, everyone would immediately jump up and literally run out of the room to get a breath of fresh air from the hallway. I had never seen anything like it, and it was quite an entertaining scene to watch. When the training ended, we sat around on the mat and talked. Wrapping up my gi in my belt was a ritual I had been doing for years and years after training. I sat down on my knees and folded it with perfection while the sweat dripped down my scratched face and bare chest. The pants, the top, then tightened the belt in a knot around it. Jonathan walked through the door a good 2 hours late for class due to traffic. He was staying in a love hotel and asked if I wanted to share a room with him, sleeping in a gym or a love hotel. Both sounded like great adventures, so it was a difficult decision. I thought to myself that I would get the chance to be a bum and sleep in a gym another time, so love hotel it would be. I said goodbye to everyone and thanked them for the training and offered to sleep over. They were eager to have me back for the training the next day. I would love to train more with them, but I would only be in Manila for a few days and I had a ton of invitations from different places. I almost felt bad telling them that I probably wouldn't make it back. It was my mission to visit as many gyms as possible on the trip and train with as many different people as I could. Despite wanting to be that guy who was friends with everyone and train with everyone, it was sometimes difficult to turn people down because I had to train somewhere else. Getting emotionally attached to one place could happen very quickly, and then going to their competitors the next day was sometimes difficult. I didn't want to feel guilty about it, but it was hard not to. Things shouldn't be like that. Everyone should train with everyone, and politics are childish and stupid. I needed to get rid of those thoughts in my head and just go train everywhere as much as possible. 4 more gyms were already lined up for the coming 2 days in Manila, a schedule as busy as the afternoon traffic I had just been caught in coming from the airport. It was going to be hard work, but I could look forward to a little vacation on the tropical island of Boracay when it was over. The hotel Jonathan had found was called So Good So Clean, or in short, SoGo, and it was exactly like I imagined a real love hotel would be. People in the lobby and elevator were whispering, looking down at the floor, trying not to be seen. Jonathan had already spent a night there in an all-red, all-velour padded room. When we asked in the reception to change for a double room with 2 beds for a few days, they were clearly confused. No one came to that place to stay in a room with 2 beds, and no one stayed for more than a couple of hours at a time. Next to the hotel was a little convenience store. It had a door in the back that led through a small hallway to the reception. It was a secret entrance for those who didn't want to risk getting seen walking through the main entrance. Needless to say, we thought it was so cool to have a secret entrance that we right away decided to never use the main entrance again. It was difficult to not laugh when standing in the elevator together with several very embarrassed couples. I had to try not to catch Jonathan's eyes in the mirror or I would crack up. A small TV screen on the wall was showing cheesy romantic scenes of couples on the beach having dinner, getting married. It was probably in stark contrast to what was really going on in that place. The hallway smelled funny and spanking noises could be heard coming from one of the rooms next to ours. We had two beds. It was the only family room they had in the entire hotel. There were no windows, and the beds had rubber sheets under the cotton ones, easy to clean from being soaked in bodily fluids several times a day. When flickering through the channels and realizing that there was nothing but porn on the TV, it suddenly became very clear to me that I didn't feel like touching the remote anyways. A guy who had invited us to come train in his gym was taking us to a party that night. Both me and Jonathan owned only sandals, but a 24-hour shoe shop down the street, which was actually more a pile of shoes on the sidewalk that some guy was selling from, saved us. Despite not even really moving at the party due to exhaustion, both our new shiny pairs of shoes had completely fallen apart before we made it back to the hotel in the night. The small front desk looked messy in the first gym we visited the next day. So did the matted area in a room with a few fans on the walls and in the ceiling. I didn't mind at all. I felt at home in any gym. A big brown belt named Ali was teaching guard passing. He had some good details that fit my game perfectly, and I made mental notes of it to bring back to the gym at home. Despite being a heavy dude, his movement was smooth and light. I listened interestedly to every detail he explained, making sure to remember it. After 5 or 10 minutes of drilling the moves, we did a round of guard passing, winner stayed in. There were a lot of blue belts in the class. They all worked hard and looked really athletic and competitive, so I assumed I was up for a few challenges. My first round was against a small purple belt. We clapped hands and I slowly rolled to a lazy inverted guard. As always, I tried to signal that I would be going nice and easy, especially with the small guys who I had no intention of trying to bully with size. He was having none of it though, and within seconds I felt like I was inside a tornado. He went all out to pass my guard with full speed and power. His grip on my pants seemed incredibly strong for his size, and I was trying to figure out what was up and what was down as he pulled me around. I weathered the storm and eventually managed to sweep him for top position. "Alright, so this is how we play," I said to him, laughing. It didn't bother me. People train differently in different gyms, and I wanted to respect that and go along with whatever style they had. The next many rounds, I had the pleasure of rolling with both strong, aggressive, and small, easygoing guys, all on a high technical level. A small stereo in the corner played some nice and relaxing music. It was awesome. In my own gym, I always train to music. There is nothing better than listening to good tunes during good rounds of sparring. This was the first gym so far on the trip that did the same, and I enjoyed every moment of it. I gave Ali a thumbs up when he asked me from across the mat to roll. My observation of his movements from earlier were correct. He was fluid, strong, and highly technical for such a big guy. The pressure he put on my guard was immense, and I struggled to defend his pass, only to fail again and again. Ralph, a tall, lanky guy, was next. His game was impressive, smooth, powerful, and really tight. I didn't stand a chance to attack the two guys, but working on my defense against such high-level offense was great for me. Mentally, it didn't feel nice to get smashed and outclassed in sparring, but I figured it was probably only because I wasn't used to it. I knew I'd better start getting used to that, because there would undoubtedly be a lot of guys out there for the rest of the trip against whom I would stand zero chance. After class, there was no time to hang around. We had to get to the gym. I quickly said thanks for the great training to everyone and bought a Pray for Japan t-shirt they had produced for charity. Jonathan and I were both intense jiu-jitsu travelers, but combined we would reach unseen levels of madness in terms of training schedules. For some reason, it seemed like we were trying to break the Singapore record of 3 gyms and an all-night party in a day and a half. This time, we had 5 gyms scheduled in less than 48 hours, and a party. The Manila Marathon was officially on, and we were already in the taxi on the way to the next training session. Wet geese in the trunk and no time to shower. We made it to the class just in time. I recognized the face of one of the guys standing in the reception. He was a big bald guy wearing small glasses and a polo shirt. It was Francis, one of the first guys to email me and invite me to come by when I posted around forums about my idea. What a great feeling it was to shake his hand after talking for over 10 months about coming over. I had little energy left for training after the hard workout earlier, and my mind was completely zoned out as I tried to survive the hour and a half on the mat. The shower after training was one of the best I've ever had. It was warm, luxurious, and had 3 different soap dispensers. I was done. Beaten. My face was all red. I stood quietly under the steaming hot water for a long time, almost sleeping. I was so tired, I felt like I was in some sort of trance. When I had changed, I used 2 alcohol wipes on my arms to kill whatever bacteria that might have survived in the shower. It stung badly when it touched the many bruises and cuts I had gotten from the 3 training sessions since I arrived in the city less than 24 hours earlier. Francis took us out for dinner. Delicious pig face was on the menu. He explained to us that because of the traffic situation, there were small branches of jiu-jitsu gyms all over town. Living more than 1.5 kilometers away from the gym, it would be impossible to make it there in time for training. And walking is out of the question due to the air pollution. Back at the hotel, I felt like I'd been hit by a truck. As my body cooled down, my knees started to hurt again. I could feel the inflammation start to grow. Fuck. 3 training sessions in 24 hours had been hard on my body. I was too tired to fix the cotton sheets on the bed, so I just kept my clothes on and lay down directly on the rubber mattress instead. The red light from my little bed light was on, and I couldn't lift my arm to turn it off. It was not like it was going to keep me awake anyways. Jonathan was speaking in Indonesian with one of the workers of his factory in Bali, and the sweaty smell of our geese hanging to dry in the bathroom had filled the little humid room that had no windows. I was knocked out for 14 hours straight. First stop of the day was to visit Wacky, a professional boxer who had emailed me and invited me to come train with him. He had recently started training jiu-jitsu and was an eager white belt following my blog. The Philippines are known for their legendary boxers, so I thought it would be cool to do some boxing while I was there. I had trained several years of striking in Muay Thai and MMA, but it had been a while since I decided to dedicate my full attention to jiu-jitsu. Despite looking good on the heavy bags, my timing was way off. When I trained MMA, my trick was to look really good when I was striking. In reality, I could never hit anything, but instead I gave my opponent an illusion of being skilled just so I could get a chance to take him down. Wacky was all over me. It was like rolling with a really good jiu-jitsu guy, always being one step behind. Whenever I thought I had found an opening to hit him, he already knew it was coming and elegantly slipped my punch to follow up with a hit to my stomach. Eventually, my instincts took over and I accidentally hit him right on the chin with a perfect knee strike. I didn't even think about it, but just lifted my leg as he tried to close the distance. Everybody in the gym was watching and they laughed and clapped as I caught him with the, in boxing, very illegal technique. I spent the last minute of the round running away and shooting for double legs, to the amusement of the old boxing veterans who were standing around the ropes of the ring. It was great fun to do some boxing again. I had missed it with all the jiu-jitsu nerding I had done for so many years. We had an appointment to go train at a place called BAMF, short for Badass Motherfuckers. I didn't know what to think about that name, but I kind of liked it. Pee-wee was our driver for the day, a fun guy who talked a lot. Having lived in the States, his English was perfect. It seemed like most people spoke fluent English, even the jiu-jitsu classes were in English. The front street with the little sidewalk shoe shop was bad, but the back street was horrible. It looked like a serious ghetto. On the corner, a guy sold hot dogs for 30 cents. There was music playing. People were sitting around on dirty streets in old plastic chairs, kids were skateboarding, and the buildings looked like they hadn't been renovated in decades. A small restaurant stood out as the most well-maintained property on the street. It had dark curtains and neon signs in the window. I guess that if you wanted to go to the nicest restaurant in that neighborhood, you probably didn't want to look out onto the street anyways. It was strange to sit in an expensive car with darkened windows and drive right through the area. No one could see us inside the car. We were spectators to their world, completely separated despite being only a few meters away from each other. The motherfucker guys trained in an enormous building. It looked like an old warehouse that had been rebuilt and was one of the biggest gyms I had ever seen. The light was dim and a cold concrete floor convinced me to keep my socks on for a while. I was too tired to concentrate and found myself zoning out as the instructor explained exquisite details of passing the half guard. I followed along like a zombie, a really bored zombie. It had been more than 2 hours of push-ups and technique repetitions before it was finally time to roll. It was my last training in Manila, and I thought I might just as well use the last bit of energy I had in me. I finally got to roll with Jonathan. His game was good, and he felt really strong. It was the 8th gym we had visited together, but the first time we actually got to roll. As I left the mat to look for the showers, a small guy with a dirty white belt and a patched-up gi caught up with me and reached out his hand to shake mine. He was an avid reader of my blog and asked if I had energy for a roll. There was absolutely nothing left in me, but I somehow still managed to go one last round with him before my body finally set stop. Once again, Jonathan and I had completed a jiu-jitsu marathon. In Singapore, we did 3 gyms in 48 hours, but in Manila, we managed to do 5 in the same amount of time. It had been really interesting for me to roll with so many guys that had different games than I was usually exposed to at home. Lots of guys had played reverse de la Hiva, 50-50, and deep half guard on me, which I wasn't used to dealing with. Back home, I was basically only exposed to whatever I had been teaching people. In 48 hours, I'd gotten more practice in defending new moves than I would in a year at home. I realized that I had to do this more, expose myself to different games of jiu-jitsu. I needed to train more with different people, compete more, and study more. It was easy to get accustomed to only rolling with the same 20 to 25 guys who are all doing roughly the same game. If I ever wanted to be successful in competitions, I needed to be able to handle all the different moves that were out there so no one could surprise and puzzle me with them. Home was still very far away, but I was excited to get there and study jiu-jitsu with my training partners again. There were so many challenges for us to work on together. My friend Søren and I had bought tickets for the Football World Cup in Germany in 2006, but when Denmark failed to qualify, we had to figure out something else to do with our money and vacation time. We put our minds to finding the tropical beach we had been dreaming of, and through lots of research and a long, long flight, we ended up in the little Philippine island of Boracay. I immediately knew that it was the right one. So many years of wallpapers on my Windows computer of tropical beaches and islands, and at the age of 24, I finally made it to one. We spent almost 3 weeks there and enjoyed every second of it. With about a week left, we heard that a typhoon was going to hit the island straight on. We joked about going to the beach to play extreme badminton, flipping a coin to determine who would have the wind in his back, and were a bit excited and silly about the whole thing. As we woke up in the middle of the night, it suddenly wasn't so funny anymore. It sounded like someone had placed a jet engine right outside our little bamboo bungalow and pulled the throttle. It was one constant, powerful wind that made a loud, steady whistling sound, like when you blow into the top of an empty bottle. We got up and opened the door. It looked like it was raining sideways. Palm trees had fallen down all around our hut, and coconuts were flying through the air like missiles. We slammed the door shut again and went back to bed, trying to fall asleep, hoping that our bungalow wouldn't blow away in the meantime. The next day, half of the island was destroyed. Boats had been thrown up on the beach, and the roof of the little bar in the place we were staying had blown off. The beautiful palm trees on the beach had lost all their leaves and looked strange as they stood there all bare. We heard rumors that a few fishermen had drowned, and that it had been the biggest typhoon that had hit the island in 15 years. Now I was back on that same beach, and it looked like nothing had ever happened. My eyes were blinded by the light from the setting sun as I walked out into the sand to find a spot to sit. The view hadn't changed from what I remembered. My photo of it had been the background image on my computer for a long time after I got home. It had only been 3 days since I talked to Jaguar for the first time. I got his number from Steven at the Boiling Hot Manila Gym, who told me he was on the island of Boracay for a couple of months going through job training as a chef in a hotel. Being a jiu-jitsu geek, he had found some mats and was holding a daily open mat for anyone in the area wanting to train. He was 23 and Taiwanese, but grew up in the Philippines. His dad had apparently had a big love for the Jaguar cars, so he named his son after them. He had been following my blog for some years and told me that he had pulled off one of my moves in a competition. It was pretty interesting to have had an influence on a complete stranger's game on the other side of the planet. When Jaguar's girlfriend, Ruby Ann, was off work, we picked her up and took a little tuk-tuk to their apartment. They lived at the end of the long beach in a small studio apartment on the top of a hill. It was a beautiful view from there. The island was as exotic as it gets and resembled anything you would see in a Bounty commercial. At the bottom of the hill was a little beach with a few local fishing boats anchored. I sat on the small balcony and looked into the apartment through the big windows. Ruby and Jaguar were lying on the bed talking. They spoke a strange mix of Filipino and American English. Ruby Ann was 17 years old and had a summer job as a waitress. I was once again amazed at how jiu-jitsu had dropped me straight into the everyday lives of some locals. These were experiences that I would never have had a chance to have as a conventional tourist. The apartment was really small and barely had room on the floor for the mattress I was sleeping on. As I lay down and tried to rest, pain in my knee from all the training in Manila kept me awake. I must have laid there for an hour. A fan and a gecko were the only things to be seen in the white ceiling. It was interesting to be back in Boracay. It had only been 5 years since my last visit, but I felt so much older. I had never noticed that I had changed, but coming back to that place again and seeing it with different eyes made me realize that I had matured a lot since then. It was hard to put a finger on exactly what was different. Maybe I saw myself differently in contrast to the young couple. I had definitely become way more confident as a traveler and, unfortunately, less affected by the beauty of tropical exotic islands. Since visiting that island for the first time, I've been to many of the most tropical destinations around the world, and for each trip, they felt less and less special. The week before I arrived, Jaguar had borrowed some puzzle mats from a hotel that had yoga classes. They needed them back now, and the guys he had rolled with had returned to Manila. We had no mats and no one to train with. Jaguar had the day off, and we walked around the beach thinking about how we could get to do some training. The only thing to do was to build a whole new gym from scratch, so that's what we did. We needed mats, and since we're on a small island, getting real grappling mats was not an option. The back road running along the beach was full of little shops selling anything you could imagine. We found a hardware shop that had a large roll of blue plastic canvas. We bought 5 meters of it and hoped we could fix it on the sand with some big rocks. They cost something like $3 and must have been the cheapest mat space any BJJ gym in the world had ever gotten. We decided that our gym needed some sort of a sign to make it more legitimate. We walked up and down the back road to look for the place that made them, but it was closed. Right next to it was a building lot. The workers had gone home for the day, so I went treasure hunting and found a nice big piece of plywood and a sharp-tipped board with some rusty nails in it. A few minutes later, we had also stocked up on spray paint and walked back to the beach to find the right spot for founding the island's first Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy. A heavy rock doubled as a hammer to put the pieces of wood together, and while Jaguar tried to find something to pin the canvas to the sand with, I painted a nice sign complete with a beach and sun on it. BJJ Boracay, open mat. We fixed the sign in the sand and were all set. The sun stood high in the sky, the palm tree above us gently swayed in the wind, and the crystal clear blue water next to the mats was completely calm. It was probably the coolest jiu-jitsu gym I had ever trained in. Now we just had to wait for someone to come and join. So far, it was only me and Jaguar, and we wasted no time getting to roll. Within minutes, we had sand all over, and about 20 people had gathered around us as we scrambled around on the blue canvas, trying to take down and submit each other. I had missed rolling Noki, and what a place to do it. It was intense, warm, and full of sand. As I stood up in Jaguar's guard, I noticed his face was covered in sand as he lay there on his back. Despite that, the only thing that was on his mind was to give it everything to try and sweep me. Every 3 minutes, we had to get the sand off. Water breaks had a different meaning in the BJJ Boracay gym. Instead of drinking water, we ran into the water for a quick dive to clean ourselves off. The hot sun dried us in a matter of seconds, and we were back on the mats for another round. Many people stopped and watched, and several of them asked Jaguar about the training. Unfortunately, no one dared to join despite being offered free private lessons in the most tropical jiu-jitsu gym in the world. Eventually, we got tired of having sand in our faces and decided to try skimboarding. It was hard work, basically like interval cardio training. Every 2 minutes, I had to sprint as fast as I could in the water before jumping onto the board. Carlos, a local skimboarder, could keep going, but I needed a break. I sat down in the sand with my bottle of water and the sweat running down my face. The sunscreen lotion on my forehead got into my eyes and itched. It was enough practice for the day, I decided. Carlos came and sat down next to me. He was interested in hearing about my life and my travels. I was more interested in his, and even though he didn't seem like he was eager to tell his story, I persuaded him to do it anyways. He pointed to an island in the horizon where he was born. It had been impossible to find work there, so he moved to Manila and waited tables 20 hours a day for less than 50 cents an hour. It had been tough to serve food all day and still not have enough money to buy some of it for himself, his wife, and his kid. His story gave me a lump in the throat. It was hard to imagine a life like that, but having seen the poverty in Manila with my own eyes, I believed every word he said. When he was attacked one day in the street and had all his money stolen, he decided it was time to change his life. Tired of his job and the pollution in the capital, he finally moved to Boracay, where he invested in a skimboard and learned how to ride it. Practicing every day for a few days, he was good enough to give lessons to tourists like me now and then. I liked the guy, and I could see by the look in his eyes that he was definitely not making up his story. In many ways, we were very alike. We had both learned and fallen in love with a simple skill, and were now trying to make a living out of sharing this passion with others. I did it at a very big scale at home, and he alone on a beautiful tropical beach, but still, we basically lived the same life. In the evening, I lay on the mattress on the floor and looked at where to go next. The ticket to the Philippines was the last one I had bought from home. Now, I had reached the point where nothing was planned anymore, and I had to find my way around the world, one step at a time. People from different places in the Philippines had invited me to come train with them. It would be easy to just lean back and enjoy tropical Boracay without going anywhere else, but I had to make a decision at some point. I had 3 months left to make it all the way to the United States and down through South America to Brazil. I found an interesting email from Taiwan in my inbox and made a quick decision.